And it's a time of reviewing the rest of the past year. If you listen deeply, the soul will help you understand what you have to accomplish or what you have completed or what needs to be shifted or changed or let go of or healed. Or it's a magical time of year. I love autumn. Just my favorite time. And then there's some easy places for you to make contact. I also want to give you a little book list if you want to read anything more. There are many books out. I would say use your discernment about what feels good for you. I've put down quite a few of them, but there are some that are my special favorites. And I've already mentioned Behaving as If the God in All Life Mattered. That's just right up there. Let's see. Dora Van Gelder's work is wonderful, too, because she speaks from experience from childhood on. And I believe she's an Australian woman. And her work is easier to find now because this topic is more out there. When I first started doing these talks, I guess in 1988, something, 87, 88, something like that, it was really hard to say, well, here's a book you can go get this to read, because everything was out of print, so there's a lot more now. Of course, The Findhorn Garden, you've probably all heard about that at some time or another. That work still stands as wonderful. The Magic of Findhorn, and what's the other one on here? Should be two of them. Oh, The Findhorn Garden, of course. Dorothy McLean's the last book on the list, To Hear the Angels Sing. She did a wonderful work at Findhorn where they just couldn't grow anything, terribly sandy soil. And she really made contact with the nature kingdom and got specific information on what to put in the soil, what plants to put next to each other, vegetables or plants or whatever. And the plants spoke to her individually, and she recorded all of that. And some of it is just so uplifting, it just makes your heart sing. So it's wonderful work. The book right above that, The Elves of Lily Hill Farm, I have not read, but I added it. I don't know who the author is, but two people have said, you know, you've just got to read this book. And all I know about it is that I think it's about somebody bought an old winery or something, and these beings told them what to do. So they wrote this book, The Elves of Lily Hill Farm, about their experience. Do any of you have questions or anything you want to add at this point? Sure.
You talked about God and you talked about evolution.
Mm-hmm.
How do you mix those things together?
For me, it's very easy. I don't have a problem with either concept, either creationism or evolution. I think spirit or God really knows what's going on. And I think evolution from a certain perspective is just God refining his work. That's kind of the way I look at it in a nutshell. So I don't see any conflict. It's just like people ask me, I used to get a lot of religious questions about, well, how can you be a religious person and, you know, this isn't in the Bible? Well, the thing is, you need to do your research and find out, especially about angelology, for instance. There is much more written about angels than is in the Bible. A lot of that was excised, I believe, around 350 AD at the Council of Nicaea, or one of the great synods. Was that it?
I was just familiar with that.
The Council of Nicaea. They took out a lot of things at that point that they decided were not sacred or divinely inspired or whatever the terminology is. But my sense is that's man's perspective. And there are a lot of things that are part and parcel of our life that we've been told are not. Just as dancing was abhorred for a long time after the goddess religions fell out of favor with the Christian church, dancing was a natural way to bring ecstasy into the body and to have a direct connection with God. And I think some of those in power felt that, you know, they needed to have maybe a little more rigid guideline or something, and took away a lot of these things. So someday when that Vatican Library gets open, I think we're going to have wondrous surprises. Just wondrous surprises. I can't wait. I wish that would happen in my lifetime. I would love it. So I don't know if that completely answers your question, but that's my perspective.
Myself,
yeah.
I just didn't know exactly how.
Yeah, I think I'll talk a little bit. Archangel Michael is working very hard on this particular issue. He is at work spiritualizing science. That's one of the greatest works he does for humanity. And we now have some physicists, some scientists, some people in medicine, and all the different disciplines that are finding, you know, spirit is in their work. It is. There's one physicist in particular who has said he's gotten to the smallest particle, and it is light. It's light, you know. It can't be defined in any other way. It's an energy being. It's light of some sort. What is it, you know? Well, it's spirit, I guess, or the divine, something. So I'm very excited about that.
When they landed on the moon,
yes. Oh, good. Yes, I'd find it very hard myself to be a scientist and not have spirit in the picture, because with spirit, everything is possible. And that's the magical thing about realizing the unity of all life. Nothing is impossible. All you have to do is ask. And spirit is ready to answer, you know, and to provide. The thing is that sometimes what we ask for isn't really what is appropriate for us. Our soul and the divine really knows what that is, what our commitments and agreements are that we made before we came in. So, but it's our intellects which think we know it all at times, or this personality that gets in our way, I think, very often. So it's happening. Yes, Paul.
How can you open yourself up to figure out what it is?
I think you just have to listen. You have to take quiet times, and you have to learn to be still, either through prayer, meditation, reverie, sometimes journaling, different things like that, so that you can get in touch, so that you get an awareness. For myself, if I don't take quiet time, if I don't meditate, I begin to feel very disconnected. If I don't pray, you know, daily, there is a disconnection that happens, and I lose my balance, so to speak. I'm not at my center. When I'm centered, I ask, and the information flows in easily. Best thing. My son, a good example of this is, Scott has kind of put a lot of this on his mental shelf. He is an engineer, but he's tried to keep part of that present. And he was telling me about some experiences he was having with stuff at work. And, I don't know, this company had spent thousands of dollars to resolve this problem, and it wasn't resolved. And he said, you know, Mom, I know that I could do that. And I said, then why don't you just ask for the information? If you can't get it in meditation, dream it, you know, have it come through. And that's exactly what he did. And he solved the problem. And, I mean, his boss was astounded. Here they'd spend all thousands of dollars, you know, to have this agency come in or whatever, and they didn't do anything for them. And he's used that several times in where he works. Yeah, doesn't it? just imagine the places where you worked. If everybody aligned with spirit before they started their workday, if there was a gathering, a circle creates power. The American Indians knew all about that. If you gathered in a circle, even if you just stood still, you didn't have to pray or anything, to honor everyone's beliefs and then start the day, how much more connected, you know. Always before I work with my clients on a daily basis, I'll do some time where I try to align and ask that whatever is appropriate come through me for the person. It's like not my will, but thy will kind of thing. It really is. And there is no loss of yourself in that. You only get bigger. It's expansive. It took me many years to understand that. In all the dreams I had, I was always told, you must let go. You must trust. There is much more at work here than what your intellect can comprehend. The mind will never be able to comprehend what you're being asked. And I thought, but, you know, I've got to have control, that old thing. But when I finally said, I surrender, I just expanded. And you see something like the film Contact, if any of you have seen that, where she goes into this wonderfully expansive area. That's what that feels like. I don't know how else. I love that film. Lots of levels going on there. Yes. Yes, it really was. Okay. I've talked a little bit about angels, but there's a couple of points I really want to share with you. First of all, they're very easy to contact. All you have to do is ask. They honor free will, so the asking is important. They can send an energy to assist you, send insight or blessing, but they can never make you do anything. So if you're feeling impelled to do something, that's not angelic work that's happening. Sometimes a teacher in spirit will, a guide, and that's the major difference between a guide and an angelic contact. A guide will say, well, here's your options. You know, you can choose any of these. But an angel will just support whatever it is. But if you're asking for something specific, like a job, say, or a new place to live or something, the angelic contact might bring you ideas of where to look for the job or where to look for the living space. It won't say you have to go here, you know, anything like that. They will never do that. They are the most loving, patient beings you could ever imagine. They're the essence of any quality that you can think of. And I always think of them as like God's perfect ideas, because there are angels of joy, there are angels of peace, strength, courage, any quality you can think of, there are groups of angels that hold that quality, and you can call them forth when you need them. Angels of creativity or art, music, dance, the angels of engineering, you know, I always tell Scott, take them with you. And same for my daughter at the medical school. I really like this. This is not from me. This is something I read somewhere. Angels are spiritual forces that reveal unexpected insights and understanding. They are archetypes and curators of the sacred and the beautiful. I think that's one really good way to think of them. There are as many kinds of angels as there are kinds of people. There are mountain angels. There are angels that guide the workings of the oceans, the great storm angels that guide the workings of the beings in those forces, angels of healing, angels of death and dying, angels for children. In fact, children are so beloved that there are just many, many books published now on the experiences of children and angel contact. I've mentioned incense, certain kinds of music, candlelight, flowers, all those things kind of draw those forces into your own home or your living space. One of the things that they do best for humans, I think, is they do protect your home and property. Whenever we go someplace, we've never ever had a break-in at our home, and we live in an area now that's considered kind of difficult at times. Clovis is just right on top, right next door to Fresno, because it's spread out so much and they have a lot of problems with crime. But what I always do is call in an angel to stand at each of the four directions of the property, north, south, east, and west. And I know my home spirits are in the home to protect. And always when I travel, like it's 5 hours for me to come up here, I'll ask for the angels of safe travel to guide my hands on the wheel, my guardian angel to be with me. There are many, many instances in my life when I have just missed an accident or just arrived afterwards and was able to help or something, but I have never been involved myself in all the years I've traveled, you know, up and down the states or all over the place. I've never had a problem. One time I had a premonition, I guess you could say. I was coming from San Luis back to Atascadero, and I saw a vision as I was driving in which I saw this woman driving the car and her gas pedal was stuck to the floor. I realized in an instant that I was the woman, and the vision so frightened me, I said, boy, my imagination's working overtime, you know, I don't ever want to have that kind of an experience. But my inner urging was to ask my husband, gee, what if the gas pedal got stuck? What the heck would you do? And he told me, well, what you would do is not turn the key off or you'd blow the engine. You'd probably, in this area, you'd pump the brakes a lot, try to find an off-ramp that's going uphill, and then lean on the brakes for all you're worth, and then turn the key off when it was down to a low rate of speed. Not 24 hours later, that's exactly what happened to me. I was driving back to San Luis in our Volvo, and the gas pedal was stuck to the floor. And it was so funny to watch myself. I haven't talked a lot about guides yet, but I do have an American Indian teacher that's with me a lot. And the way I smell him is I smell tobacco or I smell garlic, those two things. And I got this strong scent of garlic, so I knew that presence was there. And I just said, you know, I need all the help I can get. It's starting to rain. There's some light traffic. And I was at 80 miles an hour already. There was no, you know, up ramp anywhere that I could see. So I was pumping on the brakes, and I was thinking, the mind just does the craziest things. I thought, I could write a sign saying, gas pedal stuck, help, you know. It's really stupid. When I got still, finally, inside myself, what I heard was, do not fear, help is provided. Remember what your husband told you first. So I started thinking, and I saw Santa Barbara exit, and it was slightly uphill, so I took that, hit the brakes really hard, and then turned the key off, and, you know, I was really shaky and everything. I saw it's an uphill exit, and then the road is like this, and then there's another entrance back to the freeway right across. And I saw a car sitting there with a man sitting in it. And this guide told me, we have provided a way for you to get help. There he is. But myself, I went, oh, no, I'm not talking to a strange man. And they said, but he has a phone. And this was a number of years ago where we didn't have cell phones yet, so he literally did have some kind of a phone. But anyway, I said, oh, no, my friend lives right up the road. I'm walking to her house, and they said, she's not home. You should ask this man for assistance. But no, in my stubbornness, I trudged through the rain and ruined a good pair of shoes and a suit of clothes and, you know, through the mud and everything. And sure enough, Carol was not home. By this time, I was boo-hooing, and I'm going, well, I know Carol's neighbors. I'm just going next door. And they said, you need to go back to the man. Her neighbors are not home. And they weren't. Finally, I gave up. I surrendered, and I went. He was a very nice man. He called Bert, and Bert came and helped me out. You know, so there have been so many instances in my life like this that I can tell you, when you ask for protection, if you listen, you are protected. You are given information. If you can calm the emotional body and the mental body enough to listen on a deep level. That's just one experience. So they have the ability to warn you of danger if that's appropriate. Now, I have to say that you'll hear just as many stories of people who have horrific accidents or serious illness or whatever, and they weren't saved from that. It may be in your soul's path that you need that experience, just like I needed the experience of cancer or having all those illnesses and being hit with an axe when I was a child. It awakened me in some way. The experience of cancer awakened me to the fact that I was absolutely supposed to be doing this work, and the reason that developed was that I was shutting down, you know, finally and completely. I have not been sick since. At all. You know, I don't get colds, I don't get flu, that kind of stuff. So they inspire you and uplift you. They expand your creativity. I have one friend that lives in Atascadero that all she does is call in the angels. She doesn't have a lot of money, but she can make something out of nothing. She'll rearrange her entire home in just a matter of hours, and it looks entirely new. It's utterly astounding. And she says that she always asks the angels of creativity to come in and inspire her what colors to put together, what to put where, and it's magic, it just is. So they shower you with strength and courage, fortitude. When I talk about the angel of death, I'll share a story with you about my contact with that archangel, but I was inspired to, or asked to begin doing death and dying work, and I very much resisted that. I thought, I don't think I could do that, you know, I don't think so. Well, now I'm very involved in hospice work about 8 years after I first got this idea and dreamed about it or heard it in meditation. And it's obvious to me that that's part of the work I've come to do. And It's just amazing when you say yes instead of no, how much good comes from something just so simple as saying, yes, I'll try that, or I think I could do that, that kind of thing. When I was in the workplace, I used to do medical transcription or all kinds of secretarial work, and often the offices were very tense, very unfriendly, very uptight, people unhappy and all of that. And I always took an angel into that workplace and stationed it in my place, wherever my little cubicle was. And you would be amazed at the numbers of people that would come and say, I feel so good when I come here. Or I always feel better when I come and say hi to you or something. It's not my personality specifically, though I think it's not too bad, you know. But I honestly believe that is the energetic that the angel has placed. And so I would try to get that to move in the whole office. But when people aren't aware of these things, they don't know what to do with it or how to hold that themselves. And that's what we can teach each other to do, I think. Okay. I think I want to talk a little bit about the guardian. I cannot believe it's this late already, you guys. The guardian angel, I'll just touch on that briefly. We do all have them. There's a wonderful, if you've read anything, let's see, what's his name? He's a dolphin researcher and a neurophysicist or physiologist. I can't think of his name, but John Lilly, that's who it is. He tells a wonderful story of from 3 to 8, he had two angels that were with him very specifically. And I guess he grew up in a hot part of the country because he says when he was a little boy, they used to fan him. And he would see it like wings fanning him to keep him cool and comfortable. And when he was 7, he was told by his angels that they really wanted to show him the beauty of the entire universe, the entirety of God's kingdom. But he would have to be careful who he told this to. And he would probably have to wait until he was a lot older before he could really write about it. Well, so he was at Mass one Sunday, and the whole front of the church blew open, and he saw thousands of angels praising God and, you know, just amazing things. And the whole church changed in a twinkling, and he saw that everything was energy and everything was alive and the people's hearts and, you know, God blessing them and all of that. Just an astounding vision. And he was only 7 when he was given this insight. And he did tell a nun who very sadly said to him that only saints could have those kinds of visions and he should quit making up those lies. And I was saddened very greatly to hear that, but that happens from all forms of the adult world when a child sometimes comes up with those kinds of things. So Padre Pio is another one I highly recommend reading his work. He was very devoted to his guardian angel. One of the most remarkable stories I know of Padre Pio is that he got letters from all over the world besieging him for healing help. Greek, Italian, you know, every language. And he didn't, I guess he wasn't highly educated. But there is a priest that I know of who has sworn that he has seen him receive letters in Greek and he could not read them, so he would say, all right, well, you read it. And the angel would whisper in his ear the translation. And then he would say, well, now I have to write this person. I can't write Greek. You have to help. So, and out would come these Greek letters, you know, and he would write back. He would tell the angel what he wanted to write, and the angel would help him. This is fact. It's not fiction, and it is recorded. You can read it. So, wonderful. Yes, that's right. It was Padre Pio. Yes. He used to levitate in his moments of extreme ecstasy or upliftment, expansiveness. He would levitate. And he used to be quite shy about that, and embarrassed, I guess, so I've read. Very humble man, I think. One thing I want to read, I have a little quote from him. Regarding his guardian angel, Padre Pio said, and this is so true, what a consolation it is to know that one is always in the care of the celestial spirit who does not abandon us. And that is so important, I think. I mean, I don't see mine all the time or other people's all the time, but I have that knowing no matter what I'm going through, that being is with me. And if I should suddenly leave my body through unexpected death, that being would be with me, you know, in that experience. to guide and support me or whatever. Well, I think I'm out of time about the archangels, but...
I have a question.
Yes. The archangel of death is Azrael. He is the one that presides over all the busyness or the business of leaving this physical body and going beyond. And he is the most loving, wondrous being, I think, there is. Not at all like the Grim Reaper or anything like that. The numbers of times that I've sat with people when they're dying, whether they're friends or people that through hospice, they often tell me, you know, there are a lot of angels here. They're just standing back there. And if I look and I can see them, it's those angels of death. They have a sweetness about them and an openness that it's like they're ready to carry this person home. So the way I found out about this angel, I had never heard of it. I did not believe at the time that people could have contact with archangels. I thought, you know, we're just too far down here or something. And I was writing an article for a paper in San Luis, a Christmas article, and I was sitting in the local library writing, and all of a sudden this other information began to come in, and it was about death and dying, and I thought, this is bizarre. I'm trying to write this Christmas article. What is this? But it was very important, so I was making these notes, and at the very end this name flowed out, and it was that name, Azrael. And that really startled me. I knew it was an angel name because E-L is most commonly at the end of angel names because that's one of the Hebraic names for God. And so I thought, oh, I don't know, I got to look this up. So I went home to my ancient encyclopedia. We didn't have the computer with the encyclopedia and all that at the time. Looked it up, and there it was, the Jewish angel of death. And the more research I did, the more I found out that this commonly is known as the archangel of death. And what this angel told me was that I needed to begin educating myself about death and dying because that was a work that I was going to do. I was terrified. I was really frightened. I had a good friend at the time that was very ill with cancer, and she was my first experience. And I had just enough time, I had about 6 months, to educate myself. I read all of Kubler-Ross I could get my hands on, all of Stephen Levine's work, and the other people in the field, Richard Moss, Brew Joy, doctors who've become awakened, you know, so that I knew how to just be with her and be present and hold a loving energy that supported her in anything she needed. So that's that archangel. Raphael is the archangel of healing. All of you who are in medical work, every hospital has Raphael involved intimately in that work. And in every surgical ward or operating room, there are many healing angels that bless the doctor's hands, the nurse's hands. The instruments are filled with light. When I had my surgery for cancer, 12 or 15 years ago now, I told my surgeon that I needed to connect and touch his hands before so I could just feel his energy. And the surgical nurse came in and talked to me, and I told her what I had asked was that the room be filled with healing angels and that the instruments would be just so. Told my anesthesiologist that I was going to go, my guardian angel would take me to a healing temple and to please monitor me very closely because I didn't think I would need much anesthesia. And indeed I didn't, and I came out immediately. They were suturing me up still when I awakened, but I had no pain. And I took the airway out and, you know, went back to recover. My anesthesiologist was so shocked, he came back to speak to me personally. And I just felt that was wonderful. It was such a teaching awakening time for me to hold a bigger energy through surgery and to deal with it in a different way. So when you begin to work with the angels or nature, your life will change. That's all I can tell you. Your life will change all for the better. It will expand. It will expand. And it's good to have someone that you can share it with so you don't deny your own experiences. Someone who believes you. It's really important. Michael is the archangel who has such love and affection for this planet and for humanity. He is the angel who welcomes back the Christ energy every Christmas, and he stays with us from the autumnal equinox until Christmas Eve night when Gabriel comes in and takes over. So the work that he does at this time of year is a great cleansing. He works hard to clear humanity's minds and the really the realm of negativity that surrounds the planet from all the thought forms that are not of the highest. So he helps to clear and heal that. There are incredible stories about him in World War I and World War II. You can find them in recorded history. The Battle of Britain in particular, there I've read many of the stories of pilots who saw their comrades shot dead in their planes, and these brilliant white beings continued the fighting, and or the planes flew on and their guns fired, but they could see their comrades slumped over. So there's another wonderful story that happened in France. I think the British and the Germans were coming together, and the Germans were very much getting ready to overrun them. And the Germans saw what they thought was an incredible white mounted army on horses. And at the head of this army was the most enormous steed they'd ever seen, and a man with a blazing face and shining white hair and a great field of light around him. And they thought it was some kind of new magical, mysterious armament that the Turkish had or something. They had no idea what this was. And they broke and retreated, and the British, you know, were not overcome. They saved the day. So autumn is Archangel Michael's season.